I welcome everybody back here. It's Parshas Naso. I say welcome back because we've been away. I missed last week, Parshas Bamidbar. I'll try to make a reference to it. But we also came back from celebrating Shavuos just yesterday. Shavuos was over. And our class, which this year is focusing on Tefillah, has been on a 6-week detour since Pesach. Until Shavuos, we had dedicated ourselves to learning more about Emunah, faith in God, or Yedia, and knowledge of God, and the outgrowths of that. And we discovered wonderful teachings in the book of Duties of the Heart, Chovos HaLevavos, a classic work from the 1300s, written by Rabbi Bachya. We discovered the power of Bechina, of reflection on God as a source for faith, reflecting on His creation. Not a philosophic reflection, but a reflection on what we see, what we behold, what we observe. And those were some of the things that we walked away with. So I told Marsha, who sends out the emails, she always asks me, what's the topic of this class? So I said, back to Tefillah. But I didn't really know what I was going to talk about. I figured that was a safe topic. So the question is, how do we get back to Tefillah? So over the holiday, I met a new friend, a book that I just picked up, I think, Rabbi Rosenbaum recently donated his collection of Svarim to be sold, proceeds for Yad LeYad, a charitable organization in town. And then there were some leftovers. He kind of just said they're free for the taking. One of these Svarim, I'm guessing, ended up down here, and I picked it up, and I said, wow, this looks interesting. Pathways, A Brief Introduction to the World of Torah, Rabbi Shlomo Wolbe. Now, you have heard me mention his name before. Rabbi Wolbe, until his recent passing also, was the prime disciple of Rav Yerucham Levavitz from the Mir Yeshiva. Rabbi Wolbe was born in Sweden. He was the son of a professor and had extensive secular education. But he went on to the Mir Yeshiva and became the finest rabbi in his generation in terms of Musar and spiritual development. And he wrote a book, he's got two thick volumes called Alei Shur, of his lectures to students. He basically taught in yeshiva. But he wrote this book as an introduction to Torah to the unaffiliated. And it's very short. It's beautiful just because of its brevity. But I picked it up and I read through some of the pages and I said, you know what, I would love some way to work this into our class. So, God willing, I would like to spend 3 weeks discussing with you some of the ideas of Rabbi Wolbe. The reason I decided 3 weeks is because he has three sections. The first section is called Pathways to Faith. The second section is called Mitzvot, Commandments. And the third section is called Avodah, Divine Worship. So I said, perfect. That's how we're going to get from faith back to Tefillah. From Pathways to Faith to Divine Worship. This will be our vehicle, our ticket back. So what I need to do this week then is, first of all, figure out some connection to the Parsha, and then introduce you to the first section of Pathways, which is Pathways to Faith, with God's help. So as far as the Parsha is concerned, the following thought occurred to me. Naso begins with a kind of a carryover from Bamidbar. Bamidbar exclusively was devoted to the setting up and the proper formatting of the Jewish camp. Bamidbar is really all about the Jewish people. There's very few commandments in Bamidbar. It's all about the Jewish people after having received the Torah, after having learned many of the laws, and even after experiencing a sin and a return. So they've really been through a lot. But now is the time to just set up the camp and live the Jewish life. Live with God. So Bamidbar is all about where they camped, how the tribes were situated, how the Mishkan, the tabernacle, was to be in the center and everyone else around it, and how they would travel with the Mishkan, who would carry what. The Levites played an important role. And Naso begins with the completion of that order. And then there are a number of different interesting sections. There's one section about what to do if somebody becomes impure and how he has to be excused either from the Mishkan center or even from the other parts of the camp. In the case of the leper, we know that he has to be sent away from all the camps. If a person had contact with the dead, he would only be sent away from the central area, etc. We also have in Naso the famous case of the Sota, the woman who is suspected by her husband of adultery, and there are no witnesses, and therefore there is a procedure called the drinking of the Sota water, not to be confused with soda water, and that ensures that she is either proven innocent, in which case life can resume, or she is destroyed if she is guilty. And then we have also the famous story of the Nazirite, the Nazir. And at the end of the Parsha, we have the gifts. It's also we have the priestly blessing after the Nazirite, and then the gifts that each of the tribal leaders gave to inaugurate the Mishkan. It appears to me that these first few Parshios are about building the camp, living in the camp, and staying in the camp. Because you can't just stay in the camp without adhering to very specific guidelines and very specific modes of behavior. If somebody veers from that, they could be expelled. If this sota, if this woman is unfaithful, that creates an impurity in the whole atmosphere of the camp, and she could be destroyed. If somebody is impure, they have to be sent out. The camp, living in the environs of God, we're in the palace of the king, as our sages say, and we must maintain a very high level of purity. If a person feels that they are weak and that they are succumbing to temptation, they have to become a Nazirite, because somehow to stay in this camp, we have to maintain a very high level, a very high standard. And I'm thinking to myself, this is not a thing of the past. This is not a thing of the past. We also have a camp. It's a colloquial expression. Are you in the camp? Are you out of the camp? To live the Jewish life, to live with God, you have to really work hard. You have to, first of all, you have to want to be there. And to be there, you have to learn about it, and you have to adhere to things. And that's the story of life. Are we in the camp? How much in the camp are we? How much in the camp do we want to be? There are people today that are born in the camp and find their way out of the camp. There are people that were born out of the camp and find their way in the camp. And then there's everybody in between who's struggling to, you know, maybe one foot in, one foot out, and trying to decide where they want to go. It's all about the camp. This is as contemporary as ever. And that is exactly what Rabbi Wolbe was writing. Rabbi Wolbe wrote a book, A Brief Introduction to the World of Torah, how a Jew who may not have known what it means to live in the camp, how do you get in and how do you stay in? And that is, it's a beautiful thing. And let me start off just by reading. This is a translation of the Hebrew, but it's a wonderful translation, and it clearly was just as beautiful, if not more so, in the original. So I'll read to you the preface, and then I'm going to just mention some of the ideas in the first section. A wave of teshuva, return to Judaism, and this is, the translation was penned in 1983. A wave of teshuva is passing through the Jewish world. It is being felt at all levels of society and in all countries where Jews can be found. This is the impetus that has given rise to this book. The Jew of today wants to know what Judaism and Jewishness are, although he may be very far from it. His desire is aroused by profound emotions that are triggered by disappointment with numerous systems, which promise to bring happiness and have proved to be vain. It begins to dawn upon him, perhaps the Torah is the real truth. Some individuals have begun the search for truth, but frequently the seeker of today lacks the patience for thorough learning. The throbbing pace of modern life leaves too little time and peace of mind to master comprehensive works or to engage in a methodical study. Nevertheless, many do want to know. We have tried here to introduce the reader in the shortest way possible to the world of Torah. This introduction, though brief, is not superficial. The 15 chapters can be understood on different levels, allowing each reader, according to his understanding, to catch the many hints to deeper matters therein. This little work has three parts of 5 chapters each. Each part is a Hebrew title: Emunah, faith; Mitzvos, commandments; Avodah, divine service. Emunah, in the world of Torah, does not mean belief in the same sense as in the Gentile world. The best definition we can render in English is, quote, full certainty of God's nearness and of the truth of Torah, whose directives are loyally followed in every situation. Yes, I was going to. Good. A full certainty of God's nearness and of the truth of Torah, whose directives are loyally followed in every situation. That's what faith is. That's what Emunah is. Emunah is not, unlike perhaps Rabbi Bachya would say, duties of the heart. I mean, Emunah is, well, I guess this is also in the heart. But even if a person is not observing everything, but they understand and they accept that the definition of faith is this. It's not just God abstract, but it is a full certainty of God's nearness and of the truth of Torah, whose directives are loyally followed in every situation. So it's a belief that there is a system that is that translates into real life, which keeps us connected with God. Okay, so that's Emunah. The mitzvos, part two, are the 613 obligatory directives of the Torah. No more said about that. The literal meaning of avodah is service. But this concept, too, should not be taken in its common meaning of divine service, which arouses associations of choral songs and sermons. We translate it as, quote, working on self-improvement. Avodah. Avodah means work. Right? Like in yeshiva, they say, are you working on yourself? Avodah. The following chapters are subtle hints, markers to point the way. In other works, these topics are explained at length, and practical guidance is fully rendered. Now, a concise treatment is required. The demands of the Torah are not easy. The Torah is broad and deep, and the mitzvot are many. But they are Jewish. This means that Torah, listen, the last paragraph is particularly salient to me. This means that Torah and mitzvot exactly fit the Jewish soul. As soon as a Jew has transferred himself to genuine Jewish life and thought, he feels that he has found his true self. We suspect, therefore, that the reader of the following pages will find himself affected in some way, even if he is still far from Judaism. Moses, our teacher, said in his last speech to Israel, "It, the Torah, is not in heaven, nor across the sea, but its word is very close to you, in your mouth and in your heart, that you should do it." One who comes from afar and enters and lives the world of Torah feels with indisputable certainty that he has come home. May it be his will that this book point the way for many to reach home. That's the preface. So, what are some of the points that Rabbi Wolbe writes in the first section on Emunah? Pathways to Faith. I was very, very pleased to see that the very first point is Bechina. Reflection on the creation. It just, we've been discussing that, and we saw that that's how the Chazon Ish, remember, the great Torah leader of Israel in, passing away in the 1950s, wrote that you have to just observe what God has done. So that is also Rabbi Wolbe's first point. Bechina Bebria, reflection on the creation. And he takes a look at three facets of that creation. He looks at the order, how everything is orderly. He looks at the harmony, how things fit together, and also at the continuity. Rabbi Wolbe, even though I don't know if every yeshiva student who studied his yeshiva texts were aware of his great scholarship, secular scholarship, but just to give you a taste, just to read one thing. There is order. Celestial bodies follow their fixed paths. Earth's orbit and rotation cause the seasons to change in a fixed sequence, day and night in exact rhythm. All of life is a wonderfully regulated pattern of growth. Seed, tree, fruit. Seed, embryo, infant. In man, there is a wonderful cooperation among the physiological systems. Growth and maturity are accomplished by a fixed cooperation between the glands and other parts of the body, such as the bones and muscles. The life-giving substance, blood. The cardiopulmonary circulation to the heart, from the heart to the lungs, back to the heart. The systemic circulation, from the heart to the limbs to the heart. In the entire process, it supplies each cell of the body with oxygen, proteins, and other nutrients, while removing metabolic wastes. Everywhere in exact order. Order in the macrocosm as well as in the microcosm. If there is order, who arranged it? And this is what the Chazon Ish said, and this is what that rabbi that we saw on the video, Rabbi Lefkowitz, said. So we discover order. We discover harmony. There's a sun, and there's an earth. And everybody memorizes, 93 million miles? And I'm sure maybe you've contemplated this or not. Why is it exactly that number of miles? Or he says 149,500,000 kilometers. Because that's exactly the right distance for Earth to be maintained, not to be too frozen and not to be too heated. If the distance were a bit more, the earth would be covered with ice. If the distance were a bit less, all liquids would evaporate and the ground would dry up. The distance is perfectly suited to enable life to exist on earth. Coincidence? and on and on. These are the kinds of things that one contemplates for Bechina. And he has an extensive knowledge of how insects reproduce. I'm sure you would enjoy this, Dr. Schultz. Anyway, yes, one may insist it all developed over a very long period of time, as if to say time will accomplish it. As the saying goes, what the intellect cannot do, time will. But this is to evade the real issue. If intelligence and logic do not support the theory, millions of years by themselves can achieve nothing. Even a billion years will not produce in an animal instincts whose nature, mechanics, or meaning is incomprehensible to itself. Without subterfuge, without prejudice, it is clear as day, the world was created. There is a creator. Amen. Okay. So, first point on the path to Emunah is reflection upon the creation. Now, the next area, which I don't think we got to with the duties of the heart, is let's contemplate, let's do a bechina on the Jewish people. Has anyone ever taken the discovery seminar where they have a presentation called the Seven Wonders, the Seven Natural Wonders of Jewish History? How the existence of the Jewish people defies all odds and all all logic, and it does not follow the patterns of other nations that have risen and fallen. That is a great area. A person could study Jewish history and become a believer in God. That's fascinating too. And that's what he discusses over here. And it, just as by reflecting on creation, we come to the conclusion that there's a creator, by reflecting on the wonders of Jewish history and survival, one comes to the conclusion that there must be not just a creator, but a guiding hand. What has kept them alive? The hand of God. Why have we been always a despised nation? Anti-Semitism, anti-Jewishness, what arouses hatred towards them? Their firm, ready progress against the spirit of the times. Everyone worships idols, they smash them, worshiping a single God. In the world today, the latest cult, he says, is worship of the body. Its various manifestations through the ages, licentiousness, sports, sculpture. And these are things where the Torah says, God hates licentiousness. He prohibits human sculpture. He repugns body worship. God rather loves righteousness, justice, perfection, doing good to others. These are anomalies in the world. And so naturally, they hate us because we clash. We have always been literate. In the Middle Ages, there was very high rate of illiteracy, but not amongst the Jewish people. A mysterious power maintains the continuity of Torah centers throughout the ages. No matter how far we've traveled, we've always been able to maintain that scholarship. Jerusalem, Yavne, Tiberias, Babylonia, Germany, Spain, Holland, Turkey, Poland, Russia, Italy, and today the land of Israel and America. And we're still learning, we're still studying. Who ensures this perpetuation? The divine presence is with them. Contemplation leads to realization here. Also that we look around the world and we see Jews in so many different cultures and languages, and yet we have that common Torah that binds us all. And then look at the land of Israel. The Torah says that when we will be exiled, the land will not produce for our enemies who come to take our place. And that's been the case. That has been the truth. Israel has been waiting for the return of the Jewish people to its to its shores. A wondrous nation, a wondrous land, a wondrous history. A German king once argued with a French prince about faith. Asked the king, "Show me any proof of the existence of God, which is indisputable." Answered the prince, "Your Excellency, the Jews." That's step two. Reflection on the Jewish people. Now, the next point is, how does man, individual man, find this God, connect with this God? And he offers, again, somebody who lacks the experience of being born into it and was handed it. He talks about that later, that there's distinct advantages and disadvantages. It's very interesting. He says that people who find Judaism later in life are fortunate. This is in the section on mitzvahs. We'll get into that, God willing, next week. But he offers three likely scenarios of how people find God. One is through reflection. And he claims that more people would find God through reflection if they would just spend more time reflecting. We live in a world of noise. School, work, play, socializing, radio, sports, army, politics, organizations. Rare, extremely rare, is a quiet hour, a walk alone in the forest, or an exquisite view and stillness all around. Only then something whispers inside, there is a God. When such a moment recurs, the impression is reinforced. Slowly it takes form, a meaningful, indisputable faith. So that's one way, without any mishap or misfortune, a person can find God just by reflecting and thinking. But not everybody finds God that way. Another approach, the second way people find God, is that they live chasing a certain dream. Sure, society promises them that if they will only make it to the top, achieve X, Y, or Z, they will have it all. And they do search for that rainbow, and they do make it to the top. And when they get there, they say, this is not what I was looking for. I shared with you that story about the army pilot in Israel who was one of the best. And he started in one of his encounters, he started talking with a rabbi, and he got involved with Jewish learning. And he decided after some time that he wasn't going to stay in this as a career, and he was going to, you know, go out after his mandatory duty and pursue something else and live a Jewish lifestyle. And his superior, who had trained and put so much into him, you know, says, before he left, he says, "Tell me, you know, do you just think of us as having wasted your time?" And he says, "Not at all." He says, I grew up thinking that being an army pilot, you know, was the highest thing a person could do. And you helped me get there. And it's only when I got there that I realized that there's something higher. Had I never gotten there, I never would have realized it." Honest, but true. So, some people discover God when they realize that there must be something else. They feel empty because they have everything that society told them you need to have, and it still wasn't enough. Sometimes he says he'll go to shul. What is the meaning of life? He begins to search. He may even try other things, philosophy, meditation, gurus, cults. They leave him cold. Suddenly he remembers, tomorrow is Rosh Hashanah. Why not visit the synagogue? He discovers himself in prayer. Although hardly understanding what he is reading, something hidden deep inside him is shaken. Here is meaning. Listen to this. Again, on Yom Kippur, he is drawn there. Love this line. What happens to people on this day defies description. Slowly, slowly, the impressions crystallize more and more. He begins to feel at home with his Jewishness. He becomes a Baal Teshuvah and returns to his roots, to the Jewish way of faith. That's a second way, and many people have come back that way. Another approach, he says, is more applicable in Israel, is through living close to the edge, such as people in the military, people who have been very close to death. I mean, it can happen in other situations as well. But soldiers, in the midst of the battle, soldiers are falling to the right and to the left. Murderous fire. He shoots and advances, but the terror of death is overpowering. God help me, bursts forth from his trembling lips. He leaves the field of battle alive and healthy. The feeling remains, God help. After the war, he returns home, observing mitzvos. His friends shrug their shoulders, half in mockery, half in pity. But he knows, heresy is only an outer plaster on the walls of the heart. People who say they deny it, it's, their heart is covered with plaster. They don't realize what they are inside. During those fateful moments that plaster crumbled, he experienced a revelation in himself. God lives in him. Those who shrug their shoulders, he knows now, they are prisoners of their own self-deception. He has seen man stripped of his false outer facade. God lives on in him, and he is in the hands of God. Self-discovery. Beautiful. So, man has to find God somewhere. But as he said before, it's not so easy. You know, we want quick answers, but we're not all cut out. We lack the patience for thorough learning. We want to know, but how much does it cost? So, the next step and the final step in this section is to try to give over, try to encapsulate what it means, what the Torah is. Because, you know, Shavuos, we have to accept the Torah. So, that's where it's at. That's, if you want to be in the camp, you've got to accept the Torah. You know, even Nachmanides says that the Mishkan is supposed to represent Har Sinai. There's supposed to be a constant daily acceptance of the Torah. That's what it means to live in the Jewish camp. So we have to know what's the Torah. You know, the Torah is not just a scroll that's housed in the Ark. The Torah is a concept. Like the Mark Wiener, the comedian, he performed at Ariel. And he's walking. They, you know, they have everything in their sanctuary/social hall. So he starts off over here, and then he kind of walks around, and then he ends up right with his back up to the ark. And he says, "Look, I have a Torah background." It's a joke because people think, "Oh, the Torah. Oh, that's in there." No, Torah is a concept. What is Torah? So. That's step four. And I love the way he explains it. If God created the world and everything is the epitome of order and harmony and continuity and everything works like precision, then how come the most sophisticated creature, man, is so unorderly? And how come society is so unorderly? And how come man, the most sophisticated of all, can't seem to get it together within himself and certainly with other people? It's really, it defies logic. If God is so perfect and he created the world and man is the crowning glory of his creation, how come man is filled with chaos and disarray? Human relations. People have to try to get along with their neighbors, their friends, their partners, their clients, their competitors, their opponents, their enemies. It's murder out there. And then try to make a community, try to create a village or a city, a country, and try to allow countries to interface with one another. It's crazy. We destroy each other. Like Pirkei Avos, if not for the fear of retribution of the law, people would be eating each other alive. Where's the order in the creation of man. Ah, that's Torah. That's what Torah is. Torah is the order of man. It's the instructions manual. Buy a computer and try to figure it out without reading the manual. It doesn't work. But if you read the manual, it's incredible.
They put the manual on the computer.
That's what the Torah is. The Torah is the manual on how to bring order to life, to man. So you might say, well, then God should have given the Torah to all of mankind. Why just to the Jews? You're right. He did. He should. And he tried. Right? The famous story at the time of the giving of the Torah. He went around to every nation and said, would you like to read the manual? And they said, how thick is it? I don't have time to read that. Nobody wanted to read the manual. I know. I hate reading manuals. I'm glad that my wife, she says that she's a firstborn, and said firstborns, say they seem to like to read more. Maybe because when they grew up, they didn't have any playmates. So
you are the manual.
Huh? I'm the manual. So we have at home. We have a manual dishwasher. looking at him. So who wants to read the manual? So they all said no, thank you. So God said, I'll tell you what. I'll let you stay in my world. I've got seven rules. And if you keep these seven rules, you can stay here. But, you know, you'll just stay here. I need to find somebody that will read the manual. Because that's, without the manual, the world just doesn't work. And thank God he found a nation that wanted to read the manual. But that's, the concept of Torah is that it is God's manual on how to live in the world that he created, with the people that he created. It's nothing more and nothing less. But that's not just, you know, a nice abstract idea. What's in the manual? If we're Jewish and we've accepted the Torah collectively, our whole nation, whether we want it or not, it's ours. What is it about? So here's where you have to really, to get into the camp, you have to discuss such things as halacha, Jewish law. It just summarizes very, very beautifully. The Torah's instrument in solving life problems is the halacha. Halacha is a body of laws. The essence of halacha is in the way that the laws are formulated. The process is rooted in logic, deep ethics, and unconditional truth-seeking. You see, it's not something like that a council got together and wrote a constitution. These are the principles that God gave us. And what we're supposed to do is study them and figure out how they work and figure out how to apply them. The process is rooted in logic, deep ethics, and unconditional truth-seeking. It is an experience to study Talmud for an hour. The novice discovers what the Ramban stated, to study Torah is to realize its divinity. The Gemara deals with the simplest questions of everyday life. It is unbelievable to see how one word of the written Torah, hardly noticed in the reading, illuminates the Gemara and determines practical conclusions. Also striking is the methodology of Talmud study, which can compete in its exactness with any science. Mastering this process is called learning. So, when you hear that there's this yeshiva in Lakewood and there's 5,000 students, what are they doing there? Are they all learning to become rabbis? Are there enough shuls to go around for all these rabbis? No, they're just learning. They're trying to get their hands on this system. One is constantly amazed by the understanding of the universe and human nature revealed in the Talmud. If Jews are one of the wisest peoples, then our Talmudic sages represent the epitome of wisdom. But in the Torah, there's more than wisdom. It embraces all spheres of life. It displays profound depth. The unity of the Torah and Talmud is based on a continuous tradition. Everywhere the divine shines through. When we speak of the experience of Talmud study, we do not mean the intellectual satisfaction. Everyone who learns Torah knows, this is very important, knows that his thought becomes purer, his baser impulses get rarer, and his noble qualities are aroused. The Torah, by learning it, it elevates us spiritually. This is not religion. It is far removed from religious ceremony. It is a new kind of life. It's a way of life. Torah learning is a way of life. This is what the Ramban meant when he said, to study Torah is to gain awareness of its divinity. In the midst of the problems of everyday living, it is the penetration of God's justice and mercy into all spheres of life. This is Torah's Chaim, the Torah of life. And then he goes on to develop that if Torah learning is the source of life, it is the spiritual food, so then the people that we have to keep our eyes on as we go through life are the masters of Torah. They are the leaders. They are the ones who have gone through the maze of this world and they have found the secret. And then he gives a short history of who are the great people in our tradition that we regard as our luminaries. And it goes all the way through the generations from Avraham. He skips a lot to Moshe. This is not Rabbi Beryl Wine's history course. Avraham, Moshe, King David. These are Torah masters. Hillel, the sage Hillel, who was the most humble. Ramban, this is skipping hundreds of years. Rav Yosef Karo, who wrote the Shulchan Aruch. The Vilna Gaon, who died in the late 1700s. And the Chafetz Chaim, who died in the 1930s, and he mentions the Chazon Ish, who died in the 1950s, and it continues till this day. So, once a person enters into this concept of Torah, immediately our eyes, our focus shifts to those what we call the Gedolim, the great masters of Torah, and we don't just see in them scholarship and intellectual wisdom, we see a harmony of intellect and spirit and qualities, and that's where we see the divinity in the Torah master, in the Talmud Chacham. So, in just a short few pages, page 30 till page 32, Rabbi Wolbe has painted a magnificent, magnificent mural of what it means to have faith. And I look forward with you to, I haven't read the rest of it, but look forward with you to going on to the section on mitzvot and then to back to Avodah, to the divine service. So stay tuned. Okay. Have a great Shabbos.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.